everyone. I'd just like to say thank you to Pim for the invitation. When it came, as I haven't been practicing writing prose for quite a while, I've been writing film scripts. So when the invitation came, I thought it must be because I'm Zimbabwean. And indeed, what is going on in Zimbabwe is something that most people who are involved in any analytical enterprise in the arts or in any other area must be following. So I thought it would be appropriate for me not so much to think about the role of the African writer, simply because when I think of myself, I don't think of myself as an African writer. I think of myself as Manyika, as Sisi Langaremba. And the place I live that people call Africa is actually, to me, the place where the children run in the garden, where the water sort of starts ebbing away at 6 o'clock in the morning out of the taps, only to get back at 6 o'clock at night, if I'm lucky. So this place that people call Africa probably means something quite different to me. And I thought that rather than talk about the role of the writer, I would just give you an example of some of the prose I wrote quite recently. It was a commissioned article, and from that you might be able to deduce what, for me, the role of myself as a writer who comes from Africa is. The title of the piece is called Electing Zimbabwe. My heart is in turmoil and I am in great pain. What is the world coming to when a Zimbabwean must be afraid to say, I am a Zimbabwean and this is what I believe in? There is a lot at stake, as I know only too well. As Zimbabweans, we live on a continent and in a country where people die of easily curable diseases, where people still die of hunger. In this situation, few of us are willing to give up what little security we may have eked out for ourselves, for fear of losing what little we have. Yet, at fear of great cost to myself, my pain and hurt is so great that I feel I must speak out finally. I have been avoiding public announcements on the issue of Zimbabwe's politics, yet as I write, those who call themselves the defenders of law and democracy are preparing to march to protest against the results of the just-ended March 31 polls. I am Zimbabwean and proud of it. I was born in this country. When I was very young, my parents relocated to England for several years in order to pursue further education. It was in England that I first learned to smile when sweet old ladies called me Pikanini. That is, until I went home one day after having smiled many times after receiving sweets and pats on the head or pennies for my cuteness. I'm a little Pikanini, I told my mother proudly. Mum wasn't amused. No, you're not, she said tersely. And my mother was at that time a gentle, non-abrasive type, not often employing terseness. I knew something was wrong, but it was good to be found cute and sweet and to be given sweets. Why not, I asked. That's what the lady called me. Mum went on to explain the derivation of the word from the Portuguese meaning little child and its generic usage to denote any child of color. More recently, I had another run-in with Pikanins. This occurred several years ago at a writers' festival in Durban. The festival organized an essay competition for local Durban secondary schools. The prize-winning essays were read out at one of the ceremonies during the festival. The essay that won the third prize was written by a young white girl, and it was the story of a maid on her Sunday off. This maid, too, ran past Pikanins. I picked up on this, as well as on several other points during the Q&A, when I asked the judges whether they had considered that they might offend young people from indigenous secondary schools, or that such offense might have easily been avoided by a change of language. Apparently, no one had considered these possibilities, which to me were very self-evident. In fact, I was censured for attacking and traumatizing the young writer. Actually, I was quite traumatized by the event, as I believe were all the young girls from indigenous schools sitting in rows at the front of the auditorium. Time has healed the trauma, but I remember the tears I didn't shed. Slowly, I and some of the people involved revisited this incident. I was told, for example, that pikkelin was a Zulu word for little child, and the Zulus used it themselves. At this information, a lot became clearer. Firstly, was the question of intention when an act is committed. If a person does not intend to commit an offense with word or action, can he or she be blamed for using that particular word or action? Secondly, was the question of ignorance versus knowledge. We know what we have experienced. If no one has reacted against the use of a word or action, then how is the other to know the word is offensive? The way I see it, objections have to be raised as and when necessary. In the context of pikkelin, or its more correct original pikkelina, the phrase was a term used by the early Portuguese in this part of Africa to denote a little black child. It soon became a generic term, much as the word boy did. It connoted people who were looked down upon by the user of the term, and furthermore was not used generically by the users to describe their own children. By raising the objection and hearing other people's points of view, I began to realize how the young white girl had used the word without any awareness of its roots in racism and the relegation of African people to positions of inferiority. I did not condone her usage of the term, but at least I was on the way by challenging and listening to deeper understanding. I feel in a very similar situation today after Zimbabwe's sixth election, and I'm dealing with the entire crisis in my country in the same way as I have dealt with the question of being a pikkelin, trusting to my personal and collective experience to inform me. To continue shaping my perspective on the situation in my country through first-hand experience, this is why I returned to Zimbabwe in December 2000 to live at home permanently. I had left Zimbabwe for Germany in 1989 to take up a film course in film and television studies in Berlin. Although I completed my course in 1997, by that time I was married and had children. My husband and I had not saved enough to enable us to relocate to Zimbabwe and make a living there, so we stayed in Germany. I was perpetually homesick. My studies at the German Film and Television Academy were a huge step for me, intellectually and artistically. I had some wonderful lecturers, including Hungarian director Belatar and amazing British actress Tilda Swinton, who single-handedly changed my attitude to directing actors, enabling me to develop my talents in that direction. Sadly, though, the excellence of these fine people and others like them only served to underscore the very insular and xenophobic nature of the society I had gone to live in. Then in 2000, the land invasion started in Zimbabwe. This is what finally compelled me to act. There was widespread coverage of the invasions on German television. At some point in June 2000, ARD, which is the main German program, showed footage of some young men throwing a burning log into a farm outbuilding. The commentary deplored the violence that was taking place in Zimbabwe. A little later, the same footage was used with the commentary deploring the escalating violence in Zimbabwe. Finally, the same footage was used a third time, while the commentary in a sepulchral tone talked of the absence of all law and order in the country. One newspaper compared President Mugabe to Pinochet, and one blamed him for the plight of the Tonga, who were displaced when the Kariba Dam was built in the 1950s. Finally, a professor from a university I was enrolled at to do my doctoral thesis on the reception of African films told me she had been approached by a journalist who was looking for a Zimbabwean who took a different view from the prevailing doctrine in the German press. The journalist wanted this Zimbabwean to write her or his point of view as passionately as possible. She thought I would do a good job. With much misgiving, but as I was broke, I agreed to write the article. Imagine my surprise when my article was published alongside one by Peter Godwin of Mukiwa fame, and the headline suggested Zimbabwe was in a black-white conflict. I was terribly angry that I had not been informed. It was then that it became clear to me that I could not stay away from home and retain my national integrity. Without preparation, without work, with practically nothing, my husband and I and two small children relocated. Luckily, I had a one semester teaching job at MIT, so I was able to keep the family afloat. Many people in Cambridge MA were interested in my perspective on the situation in Zimbabwe. I told them what I knew, how my father had always pointed out a big tree when we took a trip to our rural home near Mutare in the beautiful Eastern Highlands. He told me he had been born under that tree, but he and his family vacated the land and it was taken for cheap sale to British World War II veterans. I told my audiences of the members of my family who had been killed during the liberation struggle, including an older cousin who had suffered from cerebral palsy and so had not understood the village order to take cover. Instead, he had been told never to let the cattle stray. So when the alarm sounded, he ran around to round up the cattle. Rhodesian security forces shot him in the back. My aunt found him later with his intestines spilling out. She heaped them back in, but he died in Mutare General Hospital. These are the stories I tell because they are what I know, and I believe they have not been adequately heard. My point is that there has been a lot of suffering all round. Suffering is not limited to one group of human beings. Yet it seems to me that some suffering carries more human weight than other suffering. It is not so much a case of do we not bleed, as everyone, I believe, agrees we do. It is rather now a question of, is our blood worth as much as yours, and do the wounds pain us as badly? The article goes on, but my 10 minutes are up, and so I'll leave it there. Thank you.